So this week I watched Indiana Jones, and it was one of the more explicit movies we've covered for Movies for When. I'm really excited. You know, I obviously have to give a content warning, but who is the director? It was someone I'd never heard of. I was surprised they were in the Rumble.
Steven Schlongberg in Diana Jones. Denny, you got the wrong DVD at the wrong kind of store, I'm afraid.
Oh, fuck. Why am I so horny all the time?
Raid hers of the Lost Ark. I don't know.
Man. I think if you get 1.5 sex jokes out of an Indiana Jones title, I think you're doing pretty good. I think we should leave it be.
Raid hers. I hardly know hers. Welcome back, everybody. 1.5
panty sex raiders jokes. Of the Lost Ark. God damn it.
God. Okay, now we've got there. Right. Now we've got the full sex joke out of the way. Oh, it was a lot of walking to get there. And Steven Spielberg has taken a long walk to get to the ring because he's the third entrant, folks, in our Movies for When Director Royal Rumble. Oh, holy shit. Three strong entrants so far, I gotta say. But I feel like the visual in my head right now with Kurosawa, Kubrick, and Spielberg is just three guys standing around respecting one another.
Sure. Yeah. Nobody wants to be the one to throw the first chop, you know?
That's right. We'll let the movies speak for themselves, I guess, and so would they, I'm sure. Definitely our most prolific director out of these three, despite Kurosawa's insane run of great films. Steven Spielberg. I'm excited to be talking about him today. I mean, third entrant, it feels right. It felt like we were going to do him at some point for this. We did kind of pick Spielberg on a little bit of a whim, but yeah, it's just like it had to be done.
I mean, I think this podcast is a podcast that shows a hell of a lot of appreciation for Spielberg, especially within like the last year of our podcast, because last year for Hot Boy Summer we did Jaws, and then we did a whole Spielberg theme where we did what, Minority Report, Close Encounters, and was it E.T. as well?
E.T. also, yeah.
And then a friend of the show, Russell McFarlane, was kind enough to guest on our show, and we did The Fabelmans.
And way at the beginning, we did do Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we did.
Oh, by the way,
yes.
I'm sorry. A quick interjection here. Happy 50th birthday to Jaws last week. So
yeah,
I didn't know that was coming up. Otherwise, maybe we would have done him before The Shining. But The Shining was an absolute blast to talk about. But happy 50 birthday years to Jaws. What a film. What a director. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, I don't even remember what I was saying. I guess I was asking if that's why, what is it, Dangerous Creatures? Is that the Monsters Are Gonna Eat You in the Water movie that's out right now?
I can't say I know exactly what you're talking about. Dangerous Animals?
Maybe, is that what it was?
Dangerous Animals, 2025. Now playing at my local cinemas. Wow.
Hey.
Well, just one of them. Uh-oh. But 85% on Rotten Tomatoes? That can't be bad. Not directed by Spielberg, Thor. Oh, God. Have I been watching Bluey again? What's happening? Enough about Australia, folks. We're here to talk about America. America's finest film director. One of them, at least. Before we talk about Spielberg, Denny, we gotta do the thing we always do at the beginning of every episode that we do. to talk about the other things that we've been watching since last we spoke, which was only about 5 days ago. So were you able to get a lot of stuff watched between now
Greg,
and
Greg, I actually definitely was this time. Forgive me, I'm slightly distracted trying to set up my my Indiana Jones vibe. I want to have something to match match my shining ambiance from last week.
Well, you're not wearing the right hat. Denny is wearing a beanie, which would be better fit for the Shining episode. But you know, talk about a timeless hat, though. Indy's hat, like.
Oh, if I could pull it off, I would, dude. If I could pull it off, I would.
It's the perfect hat that stands the test of time visually, but. Can anyone else really pull it off? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Even though, I don't know, I have a couple friends who are pretty solid low-key Indiana Jones cosplayers. I don't want to disparage them.
Yeah, I guess I'm more looking at the two of us and saying
that. Definitely not. No. Absolutely not. That is off limits for me. You've got a shot at it.
I got a weird shaped head. I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a weird mix between a fedora and like a pirate hat almost. It's how I feel it sits on a person's head.
A little cowboy, a little pirate, a little adventurer. You know, like not modern cowboy. A little bit more like turn of the 20th century kind of cowboy. Red Dead Redemption 2. You would pick this up off a guy kind of thing.
Sure. Anyway. That's notwithstanding, I do think I have found the right Indiana Jones lo-fi station. It's not too intense. Finally, that's what I was looking for.
I was going to say, it was just adventure tunes. We're going to be a little too amped for this episode. True.
I have adventured into the territory of a lot of new and fun movies. I'll start with a 2025 movie, 28 Years Later. Have you seen it or got the chance to check it out?
Haven't yet. I'm really excited to. I am a big fan of Days, and I've seen Weeks a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Years. A little polarizing reviews from what I've seen. I think I'll wind up on the positive side.
I think you will, too. I think there are reasons for critique. Like, there's some, like, kind of glaring flaws, but, like... 28 Days Later was a movie that me and my friends were really into in high school. Like, we watched it, like, a ton because we wanted to, like, show it to people. So we ended up watching it over and over again to show people this movie we liked. And I kind of thought... I hadn't watched it since high school until this trailer made me want to rewatch it earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit, this is honestly a way better movie than I even really gave it credit for in high school. My appreciation with it... kind of grew with time. So after that, I followed up and watched 28 Weeks Later, and holy shit, did I fucking hate that movie. it was, I mean this in a very literal sense, unwatchable because of the way it was shot. Oh my god, I hate the way they shot that fucking movie, man.
I only remember the opening scene and some of the inciting events from that movie. I don't remember much else past like the first 20 minutes or so. It's certainly not how it was shot. Sounds like a headache.
Yes, it's just like disorienting shaking cam, but like I can't describe how disorienting and how all over the fucking place it is. It's similar. It's done to a lesser degree in the Hunger Games movies, and that's why I can't watch those movies, because like, dude, holy shit, it's called a fucking tripod, guys. Like, the decision to shoot the entire thing in extreme close-up shaky cam is just, I don't know what the desired effect on the viewer was, but I can't imagine you thought that was, like, beautiful photography for a moment. Like, what the fuck was that shit? Anyway, I watched 28 Years Later, and I did enjoy it quite a bit. It has this really fun world discovery element that they don't even give up too much of, since we're basically finding out a new world from the start. We don't have any idea what the fuck this world's going to be like. The action scenes are really, really strong. The zombie fights, all of that shit, fan-fucking-tastic. Mm-hmm. Strong emotional core. The characters feel like they matter. I care what's happening to them. I get so fucking mad at some of them, but I think that's part of the story.
Usually isn't a zombie movie.
Yeah. You kind of, it kind of requires someone being stupid enough to leave safety, right, for the movie to happen. That's so fucking infuriating to me. I think I haven't read all the negative reviews because I just haven't felt like it, to be honest. I was like, you know what? I liked that movie. I don't really want to fight about it on the internet right now. What my real big negatives are were editing choices that seem very unrelated to what was filmed, which makes me infer that they are studio choices that were probably made late in the process. I don't know that. That's an inference. It could be like the director's vision. You know, like, what do I know? But
right.
That was the impression I got because it was very, very jarring. And so basically, to me, it seemed like they made a lot of editing choices that were supposed to give us that shot on digital shaky cam feel of the early movies in the franchise. And this is not how this movie is shot. This movie is shot cinematically, beautifully, I might add, very well shot. And so it seemed like a branding note to make it feel more like the other two. But I feel like the appeal of this one is it doesn't feel like the other two, because now every fucking zombie movie feels like the other two because they were wildly successful and influenced a lot of people, you know? And I don't know. There's just, like, weird cuts away to, like, armies mounting archery strikes, but, like, medieval armies doing that, and just, like, you know, like, the trailer that has, like, the Boots poem in it? The really fucking good one? Boots, boots, moving up and down again, that fucking thing? They basically, like, shoot that like a music video into, like, the first act of the movie, and it's just like, what the fuck am I looking at? For what it's worth, I did feel that most of that stopped by the midpoint of the movie. For the most part, all of the, like, jarring editing things, there was still a little bit after, but it definitely, it was like watching a Baz Luhrmann movie where, like, you know, the first act is like a fucking acid trip and everyone's like, whoa, Baz Luhrmann's crazy. And then, like, the second and third act are just kind of, like, straightforward and grounded. Have you ever noticed that formula he does?
I suppose.
Anyway. That's one of my movies. I managed to cover two other movies and the Baz Luhrmann filmography. I'll be briefer with my other ones.
Mucho gracias.
So these are, I watched a bunch of zombie movies that the Alamo pre-show for 28 Years Later tipped me off to. I watched Spookies, which was an okay B-horror. Same goes for The Boneyard, with some very interesting zombies in that one. One Dark Night was a very interesting one. It's about girls that spend a night in a mausoleum as a prank. It's all right. It really takes a long fucking time to get to the third act, which does have a pretty fun fever pitch. Purple energy zombies is what the Alamo referred to it as, which is a fun take on zombies. Man, there wasn't much story at all. It was, I would say the most interesting thing is that one of the characters is Dottie from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and possibly more notably the voice of Tommy Pickles. That was, I was like, what the fuck is that big actor doing here? Burial Ground was another one that was pretty sweet that I watched. B-horror. Actually, Burial Ground was, that was a much slower. That was like a more 80s one. That was an Italian one, too. Kind of a Fulci-adjacent movie. But I'll skip over that shit because I watched, at Greg's recommendation, Predator, Killer of Killers.
Oh, sick. Hell yeah.
Dude, I thought it was pretty dope.
Yeah, it's good.
I was surprised at a pivotal scene it has in common with Raiders of the Lost Ark because I watched them back to back. I don't want to spoil anything. I'll tell you off air. But yes, it was please. Weird to watch both those movies on the same day. Man, I liked Predator, Killer of Killers. Fun anthology, fun animation style. The animation was a little it felt just like ever so slightly unrendered to me. You know what I'm saying?
Unrendered or like slow frame rate? Because a lot of the that's what I'm more meant. I've
slow
seen,
frame
like,
rate. Yeah,
a little choppy.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't hate it. It was different. Man, great story. Predator Universe is like one of the only ones, and I'm like, yeah, y'all can like knock yourselves out with this shit. I'll keep watching. You know, like it's just like it's because like there doesn't need to be this like continuous character arc or anything like that. It's like it's almost always fun to watch David fight Goliath in this sense. It's always going to be that situation with a human versus one of the predator species. I don't know what their name is.
Yeah, it's like David fighting Goliath, but Goliath's never seen a slingshot before.
Yes.
but also has like a heat seeking slingshot of his own kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a real David Goliath on steroids, but only Goliath is on steroids, correct.
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely fun quick movie to watch. I don't have any really negatives on it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Finally, I watched Ginger Snaps, which is I'm building my Wolfman model. I actually
Did you say Gender Snaps or Ginger Snaps?
Ginger Snaps.
Okay, I heard Ginger Snaps, and I was like, getting Excuse a weird me. Hybrid.
No, Ginger Snaps. I wanted to watch a
weird hybrid would be a Gender Snaps movie.
Yeah, but I'm working on my my Wolfman model. I wanted to watch gay werewolf movies.
Hey.
So this one is surprisingly a very good movie. I assumed by the title and the year it comes out, which is the year 2000, that it would just I thought it was just like a joke of a film essentially. Man,
tax
it's very,
write off. Yeah,
yeah. It's very stylized. You know, like it kind of reminded me of like a. Like a Heathers type of world,
okay.
Where things are just played a little different. It hardcore reminds me of Tim Burton's short film Vincent in a lot of ways.
Okay,
it's just it's a really macabre movie with a lot of balls. I thought the main reason I bring it up to you is that Greg, even if you like this movie, which I do think you would like this movie. It'll be a very low score from you because I have never seen so many dog deaths in one movie. It's basically a werewolf that eats dogs is what most of the movie is. And it's pretty like they show you some fucked up looking dog carcasses in ways that I was like, this isn't really what I like to look at, you know? But yeah, it's a fun movie. I think you would really like it, but just it is going to really test the limits of your rule. You know?
It sounds skippable for me, if I'm being honest.
I don't think you're like...
Because he came out of his snuggle spot.
Aw, Anton, what's up, dude? I don't think you're missing any major piece of life if you don't see it, but I do think I was missing a major piece of life because I hadn't seen it. So I'm glad I watched it. I really enjoyed it.
A very Denny movie.
Hell yeah.
Oh, hold on.
Cheers. Diet Coke
Cheers.
Style.
Cheers to Diet Coke, folks. I'm holding my little dog in a little
Anton,
squish.
Anton, you would I never turn into a werewolf, would you, boy?
I promise to not let you get eaten by werewolves.
Look at no that fucking
mustache.
Way.
No
Bro, honestly,
heckin' way.
Anton would never stand for a werewolf shit. Like, he's not the type of dog that puts up with that kind of bullshit.
He thinks he's tough stuff, but he's just really a big old baby.
He's pup stuff.
He's pup stuff. Alright, you trying to get out of here? Where are you trying to go? Alright, whatever. Let me get to the stuff I watch while he figures out if he wants to be in this room or not. Pretty much only watched... I only watched three movies. Like I said, it's only been a few days since you and I last recorded. One thing that you haven't seen, which is a new movie from this year, I went straight down the middle of Quality Lane and I watched The Amateur starring Oscar winner Rami Malek. Ooh. And it was exactly a 5 out of 10. I expected it to suck. I thought it was going to be really terrible. The commercials made it seem like Malek was bored. I'm trying to kill the people that killed my wife. It's like, oh man, this is great marketing. Fantastic. It was fine, though. It has an insanely convoluted plot, which is what you need for something like this. I thought it would, a lot of the entertainment for stuff like this or like The Beekeeper is just like, well, this shit's fucking insane. That gets me more on board for like a little action movie. This one leans more spy thriller kind of action, but it's fine. It's whatever. I'm going to forget that I saw it in about 3 years time, but whatever. Good way to kill 2 hours on a Saturday. A couple things that you have watched, though. One from last year, one from this year. One from last year, I'm pretty sure. Oz Perkins' Long Legs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did watch it, and I want to watch it again because I don't remember it that well. It's what I went to see at the last time I went to my childhood movie theater before they ruined it.
That's right.
And I just, my memories of the day are the movie theater. I remember liking the movie. I remember being like, hey, Nick Cage. That's mm-hmm. nice. But I need to give it a rewatch before I have a real thoughtful opinion, to be honest.
Yeah. And I will say, I don't think that building is going to be showing Long Legs or anything like it anytime soon.
No.
They will be denouncing such things, if I may. Not to dox your old theater. but Long Legs was fine. I really liked the look and the feel of it. The story was pretty mid. I didn't really find myself too wrapped up into what was going on, but I thought it was cool. It's been on my watch list for a while. I'm glad I finally got to see it. I didn't rate it super duper high, but it was cool. I liked the style that it had, I guess I'll say. And a rewatch, I would agree, probably need to like solidify a little bit more of what happened in my head. So a rewatch sounds good, but I would personally like to wait another year plus or so before flipping it on again. So it was fine. Maybe you'll like it more the second time.
I'm sure I will.
That movie got hyped up a lot when it
came out. I will say, I don't remember being blown the fuck away like everybody else was. I remember liking it, but I don't remember being like...
It's like, the whole thing was like, this is the scariest shit you're ever gonna see. And I'm not a, like, scary movie kind of guy, and I was, like, not scared in the slightest. It's just like,
bro,
some of these people are weird sometimes. Okay.
You may not be a scary movie kind of guy, but you have watched some of the scariest movies ever made because we've done it on this podcast. Like, you've watched some of the top scary fucking movies in all of history.
Including last week. But
right,
some
I was
of those
literally
just...
going to say.
Yeah, but, like, some of those... Like, the difference is those scared me, actually.
No, yeah. You have an informed opinion. You know what it's like to be scared by a great movie.
Yeah, I but now I know what it's... Once again, have rebuilt what it's like to be not scared by a mid movie. So, Long Legs, whatever. The more I talk about it, the worse it sounds like I feel about it. But it was okay. A movie that I think I found a little bit scarier, honestly. One that I have seen, one that was, or I know you have seen, and one that was also very hyped up. I watched 2025's Sinners.
Oh my god. I would do a whole episode on this motherfucker, dude. Holy shit, what did you think?
I don't think it lived up to the hype, but usually when I say that, it comes from a place of not understanding the hype. And I totally get the hype for this movie. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it lived up to it, necessarily. It did so many cool things. Mm-hmm. There is, and I won't spoil it for people, but there is a scene where the music becomes the focal point of a scene and the filmmaking does cool stuff.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say about it, but it's going to be a standout highlight scene for me for the cinema of 2025. It's an insanely cool piece of filmmaking. I really like so many things about it. Some little weird editing blips here and there, some kind of ADR stuff that I didn't really like. I thought overall it was pretty good, though. I would watch it again. I wouldn't have an issue with that. I really liked it. Maybe not the best thing ever. I think a lot of people have it locked in as their favorite of 2025, and I don't think it's anywhere near that for me, despite only having seen maybe 10 movies of 2025. It's probably top three right now, but again, I've seen maybe 10 things. The Amateur, not at the top of that list either. But yeah, that's all the stuff I watch. I liked Sinners. I think I'll look back on it a little bit more highly and just kind of enjoy the memory of it. I'll watch it again, though. I think I have it in the same level as Companion, score-wise. Quality-wise, maybe a little bit higher in certain areas, but...
I'm torn between being like, well, then we agree that they're both good movies. Then on the other hand, I'm like, but I think Sinners is a much better good movie than Companion, which is a good movie. I'm like... Like, me and a friend of the show, Ren Regalado, text each other about Sinners regularly. Like, we're not done. Like, we're still texting each other about that movie. It's definitely my number one of 25. It's not unmovable, though. I gave it a 47 out of 50. There's not a five-star movie every year, but there definitely could be. So far, though, it's easily my favorite. I loved it, and a lot of that has to do with... my interpretation of the vampire mythology as well.
And I approached it with that mindset too, and I'm glad you're leaving room at the top so you can place Jurassic World Resurrection or whatever the fuck in there. So.
Man, honestly, that should have been what we did for Spielberg, the director Royal Rumble.
Jurassic World Arctic Assault. Whatever. Anyways, enough of that bullshit. Let's get on to the main event. The main event. This movie feels like a main event. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark, folks.
Yep.
A 1981 movie that you can watch on the old Paramount Plus. We're going to be getting a lot of play with Paramount Plus in the coming weeks, so stay tuned. Raiders, it's a classic. I'm sure all of you have seen it. I don't feel like I need to... go through the plot summary necessarily. If you haven't seen it, I can't imagine you'd be listening to a movie podcast in the first place. So I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, if you're listening and you're here, you've seen the movie. Or at least know enough about it to have felt like you've seen that movie.
I mean, it's another one kind of like The Shining in the sense that, like, I'll bet a lot of people who haven't seen Indiana Jones get Indiana Jones references because they're just all over pop culture, just like The Shining's everywhere, you know? Definitely one of those movies that, like, is just insanely recognizable.
Yeah, iconic in every sense of the word. Yeah, good comparison to The Shining. There's a reason we're, like... with the directors we're covering, there's a reason that kind of talking point keeps coming up, because... so far, these directors are brilliant, making iconic films. Raiders, I'll give you a quick critiquer review of the week here. This user gave it a 94 out of 100 and said, sure, it's entertainment, but it's some of the best entertainment ever produced. Spielberg and all parties involved were hitting on all cylinders here. Perfect for anyone at any age. Very well stated. I picked that one because I think that's kind of the main point of what makes this movie great is Spielberg and all parties involved hitting on all cylinders. This really is a communal effort. People at the top of their game all just hitting, making a cool ass movie.
Absolutely. And it's something that I feel like in many ways personifies Spielberg in the sense that his filmmaking is just phenomenal, and he makes awesome stuff with his talent. You know, like, it's just, like, so badass and cool, man.
And good hiring choice. That's the sign of a great director. Absolutely. Hiring all the right people. Let's get your relationship with Raiders first. Let's hear your history with the movie. Have you seen it a bajillion times, like every other Gen Xer? Or have you only recently stumbled on this?
No, I mean, it's definitely something I saw growing up. It was one of those things that was like, I don't even remember, like, my first watch of it, you know? I will say I wasn't like a super big Indiana Jones kid. I didn't see Temple of Doom until my adult life, actually. And I'm actually, I think Last Crusade is not as good as everybody says it is, in my opinion. But part of the reason I wanted to do this movie was because, like, literally a month ago, I was like, I haven't watched Raiders of the Lost Ark since I started reviewing movies, which was in 2017. And I, like, still hadn't logged it in my Critiker. And I was like, what the fuck is that shit about? And on a rewatch, it was even better than I remembered it. Like, it really honestly took my breath away after having not seen it for a while. I will say, ways that this was embedded in my childhood more than anything was... I've been cured of my Disney adultism, but my family did go to my family went to Disney theme parks a lot as a kid, and at Disneyland, the coolest ride is the Indiana Jones ride. At Disney World, in the Great Movie Ride, there was the scene where they're getting the Ark out of the snake tomb. I went through that on a ride a lot as a kid. Plus, there was the Indiana Jones stunt show, which basically plays out the first boulder scene, and then the plane fight where the guy gets airplane bladed. There wasn't a blood splatter for the Disney crowd, but
spraying all over everyone in their like riding cars. Yeah. Got blood on me, and then the picture goes. Ah, it's a great time.
But I grew up. With a high theme park presence of this movie in my life. I saw scenes from this movie acted out in front of me by live actors a lot. So, I think honestly that I got like so fucking, I guess I started feeling like stuff like the boulder scene was trite. Cause I like associate it with theme parks, you know? And so I think it was good that I had, like, a wash, you know, that I had a time away from this movie and have come back to it recently with fresh eyes. I think that was really good for me.
Yeah, I would agree. For a theme park ride of a movie, kind of being able to separate those two things in your head over time has got to be really beneficial to your views on the movie. That's great. My relationship... surprisingly sparse. I think I've only seen this one time
in the past.
We weren't big movie heads growing up. My wife has seen this, like, she would go to her grandparents over the summer. It's just, they had the whole collection and they would constantly have it on in rotation. It was just always on. It was this, it was Alien. That was kind of like their growing up. It's just what was on the TV in the house. Awesome. For me, it was maybe I don't remember the first time I saw this. Similar with The Shining, though, it was like I know these scenes through like cultural osmosis, basically.
Yeah.
Like I know so many things about it, and that's what's kind of making it hard to peg down when I actually did watch it for the first time. It must have been high school, but I feel like it's later than that. I think this is either my second or third time watching it in the last couple days, so I had a great fucking time, though.
Yeah, dude. Fuck yeah. Well, let's get into that great fucking time, dude. This is a great fucking time.
Amen. There we go. Hell yeah. Speaking of your old theater, amen.
How dare you stand where he stood.
If I may. This... just a great time at the movies. What's not to love? What's not to enjoy? This is a classic for a reason, iconic for even more reasons, and I want to touch on like a little bit of what makes Spielberg so special is like a little bit what was explored in The Fabelmans, right? Like, towards the beginning of that movie, I remember there was that scene where he like started making movies with his friends, like little westerns, and he figured to like use like a pin and like poke holes in the actual film to like have a bright flash of light for like gunshots.
Right.
That, like that kind of like hands-on craftsmanship. It like obviously it's evolved insanely in like the 30 years between whenever that would have taken place in the creation of Raiders. This feels so handcrafted of a movie And we're not poking holes in celluloid, but we are, like, building these sets, moving these cars, like, and it's not just, like, building the things we can see, but move, like, crafting ways to move the camera, and the things we don't see are, like, coming together to just make it feel like such a homemade, it's big budget, but homemade at the same time. It's, like, got such a great organic feel to it. That's kind of the trademark of his movies, especially, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s Spielberg, is it just, it feels organically handcrafted.
Yeah.
But again, with big ass budget and everything.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like a childhood dream coming true. It's like the energy of a childhood dream with the skill of a fucking master who is able to, like, basically manage a corporation. That's what being a director of a movie like this is. And with the budget of, you know, what the fuck ever. Like, you made Jaws or some shit like that. That's your budget. dude, it really has that excited about itself energy. You know? Like, that, like, man... It, like, this movie thinks that itself is cool, if that makes sense.
It's excited to tell you the story that it's
telling. Yeah, yeah.
And, like you were saying, like a child's dream, childlike wonder, with an adult sense of story structure.
Yeah.
I've had my nieces and nephews try to tell me stories. It's a lot of, you know, charisma and excitement. Yeah, it's just like, I'm not following you, but damn, are you excited here?
Yeah.
It's the best of both worlds, if I may.
Yeah, dude. Is there, like, a better blockbuster than this? Like...
Jaws?
Jaws is literally where the term blockbuster comes from, so yeah.
I know.
I mean, I just think it speaks to Spielberg, like, look at how many good fucking movies of his we've covered, and then we can still... Like, we didn't even have to get into his more serious shit to pull out another just, like, top-shelf movie when we've already done, like, some of his best of his best. Like, we didn't even have to do Schindler's List for the prestige director thing. We could do his action-adventure classic for the prestige director thing. That's fucking dope.
We've already covered 6 of his best movies, and it felt like there was no sort of complication of, like, oh shit, what do we pick now that we got all these movies out of the way? It was really just like, okay, we'll just get the next one in line.
Yeah.
We're gonna have a great time. That's, what a great feeling.
Yeah. I mean, he has 2 more good Indiana Jones movies. Like, you know, like, if we haven't even done all the good Indiana Joneses. That's like how
Dial
good
of
he is.
Destiny.
Right, obviously.
And Turntable of Aliens.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other ones.
Kingdom of the Lucas Influence.
Invasion of the Lucas Influence.
That fucker Snatchers. Made THX 1138 and he thinks he knows sci-fi.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, nothing else of note.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know this. The reason that... Spielberg was able to get Harrison Ford for this movie is because George Lucas worked with him in American Graffiti, and that's where the connection was established.
Right. Yeah, you just look at that guy in American Graffiti, and you're like, there's my leading man. No, Denny. No, no, no. Denny's joking, but obviously Harrison Ford and sci-fi, we're all thinking Blade Runner. Which came out years later, so this joke doesn't work.
I mean, I was jumping straight to Cowboys and Aliens. You say Harrison Ford and sci-fi in the same sentence, and you know where my mind is going.
Movies that exist. Cowboys and Movies for when movies exist. Stay tuned.
Man. Greg... Do you refer to going under the garage door while it's closing as Indiana Jones style, like I do?
No, because that little laser trips and makes the door go back up.
No, that's just another booby trap. You've got to understand how to jump the laser but duck the door.
Yeah, you and I are both very tall individuals, so...
True.
Jump the laser, duck the door is really, like... you can't just hit the button and go. You gotta, like, position yourself, hit the button, go. Don't drop your hat.
Bro.
Or your whip.
It wouldn't be Indiana Jones style if there wasn't a legitimate chance of death, okay? That's the thrill of going out the garage door Indiana Jones style.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do it just to feel something, you know? We have remotes, Greg. Just use that. No, I gotta do this for me.
I'm just realizing we didn't give a plot synopsis, did we?
No, I intentionally said, like, if you know anything about movies, you've seen this movie. If you're listening to a movie podcast, you've seen this movie. So we've covered our bases already.
Well, I did want to say I had a question about the plot. Did I pick up this implication correct? Because I'd never really gotten this before.
Okay.
Did Dr. Jones and Abner Ravenwood have a falling out because Indy raped Marion when she was a teenager? Is that what I was picking up on?
I wasn't picking up on that.
She literally says, "I was a child. You knew what you were doing." And I was like, fucking what? Is this always been in the movie? Jesus Christ.
How old is Marion in Raiders? I mean, if I'm... Marion is 25 years old, according to comic book resources. The film also implies a previous relation... This is an AI-generated overview, so this might be... Marion is dead the whole movie or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly around 15 or 16. I think there's some controversy around the age gap, that sort of thing, but...
You know what else in common with Blade Runner? The protagonist rapes someone. Jesus Christ.
When I heard I was just a kid, I think when I describe myself that way, I'm like, damn, I was only 22, living my life like a dumbass kid kind of thing.
Yeah, I've learned it.
Look at all this hindsight.
Never trust filmmakers at their figurative language in moments like this. It's what I've learned.
Yeah. I mean, anyways, yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure I was picking up on what I thought I was picking up on, because I've watched this movie plenty of times, and... I certainly got the impression that they'd had a torrid love affair in the past that had gone sour, but I never really got that, maybe Abner Ravenwood had a real fucking good reason for telling Indiana Jones to fuck off forever.
Wasn't he in... Am I mistaken that was the guy in the Alien one from, 2009 or whatever?
Bro,
Crystal Skull.
You're gonna have to talk to someone other than me, because I saw that in theaters when I was a senior in high school, and there was never cause for revisitation, my friend.
Copy and paste everything you just said. That's my exact experience.
If there are any listening parties who can confirm the existence of Indiana Jones 4 by firsthand account, please text Greg the answer to his question.
No, he played someone named Professor Oxley. That was John Hurt playing Professor Oxley. Completely different individual. Moving on. Denny, what else do you got on the movie? Well, hold on. Let me lead you somewhere, actually. Speaking of cool characters and actors that we love, Gimli's here!
What?
And you... Yeah, John.
In the beginning, right? Is that him in the beginning with Dr. Jones?
No, he's in the whole second act.
I guess I didn't clock that. That's John Rhys Davies.
You just got to listen to the voice. It threw me off because he's as tall as Harrison Ford in this movie, and I'm used to seeing Gimli as famously a dwarf.
Sure.
In the other Peter Jackson movies, you might remember, called The Lord of the Rings. But yeah, Gimli was here, and you have my excavator. He was great. He was the guy in Egypt with the beard. Helped Indy down with the rope.
I am the monarch of the sea. I love that
guy. Exactly.
Okay, I didn't realize that was Gimli. Holy shit.
Oh, man. It's just like, I recognize his name in the credits, and I was like, he's in this? And then I heard his voice. I was like, oh, he's in this.
The dude who fucks him over in the opening is a famous person, too, that I'm always like, oh, it's that guy. I forget who it is, though, because, well, that's my whole thing. I just told you.
I'm surprised you knew the actor's name for Gimli. Very impressed with you there. While Denny Googles things, we'll keep talking about filmmaking, what makes this movie special.
Alfred Molina, sorry. That's Doc Ock with him in the beginning. Alfred fucking Molina.
I like him.
He's pretty cool.
I do like him. The arms made him bad. He's not a bad guy, though.
No, he was bad in this movie, too. That's two strikes.
No arms to blame this time. Oh, man. All right. Hit me with another note. What do you got?
Well, do you feel like whether we intend on it or not, monkeys just kind of keep showing up in the movies we watch?
Movies for when you want to see a monkey die isn't a theme I'm willing to do.
Ooh.
But
I mean, I will say he went from what I would call a tattle monkey to a drinking buddy monkey. Mm-hmm. To a cautionary tale about bad dates monkey, which I think is a hell of a monkey arc. He started off very untrustworthy, but our heroes owe their lives to him.
Yeah, a noble sacrifice from one of our esteemed monkey characters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess I forgot about the monkey. Pretty pivotal monkey, I gotta say. Caused a little bit more trouble than our monkey trouble monkey.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, this was definitely probably the plot of Monkey Trouble 2 Troubled Monkey. Once it gets off the ground, it's going to take a lot of inspiration from this. It's going to be called Raiders of the Lost Meaning while he just has an existential crisis. And he's just going and looking in all these baskets, and there's nothing in them. Nothing in any of the fucking baskets, man.
Fabrics, spices, I need monkeys!
And then he finally gets the dates he desires. And well, well, well. Troubled monkey no more.
A little extra ingredient we weren't counting on.
But that doesn't set us up for... Monkey Trouble 3 Business Monkey Monkey Business. When he gets his... when he gets his sole proprietorship.
Open up a lot of LLCs.
Yeah. You know... you're saying about Indiana Jones?
I'm trying to gush about filmmaking and technique and storytelling, riveting filmmaking.
Yes.
I don't know if you have any notes on that. Were you taking a lot of notes this time around?
Not a ton. I was honestly making more comedic notes than anything, because I just watched this movie like a month ago, but I still wanted to pay pretty good attention to most of it. I think where the filmmaking is its most phenomenal to me is whenever they're within the ruins. I don't want to spoil the Diesel spot, but like, bro, this opening sequence of this movie, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, oh it's God. Beautiful, it's beautiful. Oh my God, it's pretty.
Is there a better intro scene to a movie? Just like, we're getting into the story right away. We're not even revealing the character for the first few minutes. Indy's like shot completely from behind. But like, we're getting great character introduction. Mm-hmm. Setting the tone for the movie. Like, is this the best intro scene ever made?
I mean, it's hard for me to even call it an intro scene, because it's basically like a short film about the character. You know, like, this would be like
a pilot episode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Dude, it's another one of those things, kind of like Psycho, where I knew that this is what this movie was known for before I saw it, so I assumed that this was the climax. This is not the climax of the movie. This is the intro. There's a whole 2 hours after this, believe it or not. But man, I really think that it continues to, and this is probably why I love Temple of Doom so much, because it's just mostly this, like most of the time. But whenever we are within tombs, whenever we are within the ruins, and like, dude, yeah, there is something when they're in the final one that actually has the arc with all the snakes, the way lightning is flashing on this scene, like that was a fantastic lighting choice that just really brought the action adventure to the next level, and all you had to do was flash a little strobe light once or twice now and again. That was something that really stuck out to me, is like, God, I love the atmosphere that is coming from that choice.
Yeah, fantastic atmosphere comes from the sets, the score, of course, which I'm sure we'll get into later, but like showing just what you need to show, and just insanely cool set design. You can, like, that entire tomb must have taken a bajillion man hours to create, and then like a simple effect, just flashing a little light a little bit, takes 2 seconds to do, adds, it just like completes the whole visual, the whole atmosphere. Insanely cool stuff. And I will say, since we're on the lighting, the use of shadows in this movie is unmatched. It's like, it seems like a way higher than average use of the filmmaking. It's just like, we spend a lot of time looking at people's shadows, or people within shadows, stuff shrouded within shadows, that kind of thing. But it all works so great. I absolutely love it.
Well, you know, you say that, and I think it pairs with something else that really stands out to me about this movie, is that this movie has a real darkness to it. And like, something we often like praise Spielberg for is the mom in the kitchen crosstalk with all the kids and dad coming and going, and it just feels like, hey, that's just like my house, you know, like it feels like he gets the simple good old American family dynamic down, and that's like not present in this movie. No, this has nothing to do with family life. There's nothing like, but that's present in like Jaws, you know, like I can think of a scene where that happens in Jaws. It's present in E.T., which is a sci-fi movie about an alien. There's even some degree of it in Jurassic Park, I'd say, definitely to a lesser extent, but like this is
a budding family dynamic. Yeah,
this is not really meant for kids, and that's why kids think it's so fucking cool. You know, like that's what's so awesome about it. And what you basically see in this movie that you don't see very often, definitely in these shadows, definitely in this whole darker motif, hella in the final moments of the movie, you see Spielberg do horror in this movie. And I don't think it really gets talked about a lot, but there is a lot of like, I was like, because Spielberg, he doesn't direct Poltergeist, he produces it. Toby Hooper directs it, which is also fantastic, but I felt like I was seeing a lot of what I liked about Poltergeist in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I definitely wasn't able to say that before. I had never made that connection.
I hadn't either, and I really like that. I'm not going to lie. I haven't seen Poltergeist in a while either.
Oh, dude, it's great.
It's about time.
It's great.
There's some genuine scares in that movie. Speaking of movies actually being scary. Yeah, I think I had it in my head that this was way more of a kid-friendly movie. Maybe not kids, but like 12, 13-year-old kind of was more targeted. But that was absolutely not the case. There is a snake crawling out of, not a skeleton's mouth, but like a half-decayed corpse's mouth.
Yeah.
Just like flowing out of that. And Marion is like swimming through like a sea of like falling, mostly decayed, kind of almost quasi-mummified bodies just falling
off. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy shit.
Dude.
And like there's blood, there's violence, there's, you know, it's, you get your typical like biff bam kind of fights, but then also people get shot and or like flown off a cliff or run over by a truck, stuff like that. I'm like, this was a little bit more adult than I remember, outside of course the final scene with, you know, people melting. I thought that was the climax of violence. I was wrong. It was actually there the whole time. I forgot about it. But anyways, yeah, this isn't something that, like, parents at the time, and, like, if I was 13 at the time, I know my parents would have never taken me to see this movie. I think that's why, I think I put it together, why I never saw this very much as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, Temple of Doom is...
Sheltered guy I was.
Temple of Doom is one of the big reasons PG-13 exists. It's in that movie they rip a human's heart out of his chest and make him watch it beat while he dies, and people are basically like, I'm gonna need you to say a little more than parental guidance suggested about that.
Thank you.
We're gonna need to classify this with higher ranking. So,
and American children have never been safer.
But, you know, the more I think about it, and I would love to give Temple of Doom another watch, because I feel like this is probably even more true about Temple of Doom than Raiders, but I feel like the scenes you're talking about, like the mummy crypt, you know, like, and I'm thinking about the Egyptian tomb where the Ark is, and I'm just like, man, that is much more like a modern Universal Monsters, The Mummy, Universal Studios, The Mummy. That's more what I would have been expecting than Brendan Fraser's The Mummy was when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Which is funny, because now that I think about it, damn it, I've talked myself into a loop. One of my critiques about Brendan Fraser's The Mummy is that it loves Indiana Jones more than its own source material. But Indiana Jones does seem to have some reverence for its source material. Oh my god. I gotta rethink everything.
Yeah, you're just sitting over here raising your score of The Mummy off to the side.
I think The Mummy fucking sucks, is the thing. The Universal one. I like that one the least. I love the Brendan Fraser one now.
Okay. You didn't like the Tom Cruise one?
I mean, I don't want to say I didn't like it.
I'm not going to say that you saw it either.
I did not see it, no.
I fucking knew it.
It's actually more the Karloff one that, I don't, like, hate it, but it has, like, really iconic opening shot and then a lot of talking.
And then the rest of the movie happens, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's not, like, a shit terrible movie, but it really is, like, that's not a rewatcher for me, and I rewatch a lot of Universal Monster movies, you know?
I know you do.
I feel like I might have egg on my face with the critique I made of the Brendan Fraser Mummy. There may have been more mummy in Indiana Jones than I ever gave it credit for. Who am I to talk? Who gave me a podcast?
Sorry to hold up a mirror to you once again, but here we are.
What are you, my therapist?
And then I spun the mirror and it clocked you in the jaw and you said, ah, fuck!
Oh, man. Here's something I wanted to discuss that gives weight to the plot. I happened to look it up. What motivates our young Marion to leave her quiet life as the owner of a completely destroyed bar? other than that,
right.
Is that she wants her $5,000 back. I decided to look up what the movie is set in 1936. $5,000 in 1936 is $115,634.89 in 2015 money. So I was like, she did all this shit for fucking $5,000? Like, listen, I could use $5,000, don't get me wrong, but it wouldn't get me out of my problems, you know? Like, it wouldn't buy me out of my money troubles.
But $100-some-odd thousand would solve...
Yeah, that would take care of most of it.
I would honestly say all my problems.
At least for a while. Like, until I had more problems
accrued. All of my current problems, yeah.
Yeah, dude. So what we got to do is we've got to get some supernatural relic-seeking Nazis to burn down our bars, and then we need to get heroes to offer us money for information that only we have. What information do only we have, Greg?
I mean, nothing that hasn't been already said on the podcast before, unfortunately. Yeah, there's not going to be any Proud Boys knocking on our doors asking for like more bullet points on what makes No Country for Old Men a perfect movie.
I'll tell you what we've never shared, Greg. It's top secret. Movies for why? The question no one thinks to ask.
Movies for when you're trying to find a national treasure.
Oh, shit. How have we not covered that?
National treasure? That's a great point. We've covered, like, what, 10 Cage movies?
We have not covered a Cage movie in a while.
Also true. Also unfortunate. We could do Mandy again. That was fun. I've been dying for a rewatch of Mandy.
Oh, dude, we should do... I just rewatched it. It fucks. We should at least... This is not the right Scorsese movie, but, you know, bringing out the dead.
Yeah, cool. That's a good... I was literally about to ask you, like, who's an all-timer director that has directed a Nicolas Cage movie?
Bro.
It might only be that one.
So, if you wanted to have fun with the term, you could say John Woo.
John Woo-hoo. I'm going to take his face.
Off.
Oh, man. Yeah, but, you know, we're not going to eat that peach for hours, guys. We're just going to continue on with Raiders here.
Right.
Get to the pit of the problem here.
I'd rate her Lost Art.
We're back. We're so fucking back. Oh, man. Okay. It sounds like you got something. What's up?
I wrote... Dude tosses torches on the ground in sacred archaeological sites like Marty McFly reads century-old telegrams in the rain. Devil may care with the torches. Indiana Jones is just tossing on the ground. Did you clock that like I did?
Yeah, I did. I did. It's like... the whip feels like a valuable tool that he can get out of a jam of. But he's not afraid to, like, if I gotta toss it as, like, a one-time ultimate weapon kind of thing, the super rope, the super thing that gets me out of the jam, I can let go of it sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The torches are your lifeline between sanity and dealing with the thing you're most afraid of, which is snakes.
Right.
I hate snakes. And then the one thing that keeps... snakes from getting at you is torches, and it's just like, well, I'm gonna toss these in some sand real quick.
Right.
It irks.
So cavalier.
Mm-hmm. A very cavalier character. Indeed.
I mean, that's kind of the charm, ain't it, though?
Yeah, it is. It is. But yeah, I would think that somebody a lot more afeared of snakes would be a little bit more resourceful with their torches. I'll just say. Is that a cinema sin? No. I don't care. Fuck off.
It's more himbo behavior.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I'll be in and out of here in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm not going to need this. I already used it.
Yeah, like, what am I going to... I only have two hands. I got to carry the arc. What am I going to do with all these torches?
Right.
Yeah. Man. Cinema descend.
I feel like that... This is a movie kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean in the sense that it breathed life into a genre that a lot of people liked, like this whole like pulp 1930s action adventure. This was a very big boomer archetype. It was like a Tarzan type archetype. Not like right. Tarzan, but it's one of their like iconic boomer John Wayne Tarzan explorer guys.
And then a movie adaptation of such a thing would just need a great score to get it over the edge. I get you.
Right. Exactly. That's another comparison. It's like that in the sense that it created this love letter to the genre while also being like the best thing ever in the genre. So it's kind of like in the sense of like Pirates of the Caribbean, it's like, holy shit, man, I miss pirate movies. It's been so fucking long since someone did one like that. It's like the best one ever. Cool. Do you want to see another one? No. Do you want to see other pirate movies? No. No, I'll just watch Pirates of the Caribbean anytime I want to watch a pirate movie. That's perfect. I don't need a better one. I don't need anything else. I don't want to watch 10 more pirate movies. I just want that one. And this is kind of how I feel about the faceless indie archetype, so to speak, is I'm like, nah, I don't need to see 10 movies like this to get the point across. There's never going to be one that gets the point across as well as this one. This is good with me, dog. It's so fucking awesome at what it does.
Yeah, it respects its influence, but doesn't lean on it completely. So, I see what you're saying, and I love it.
Yes, sir. Give me a note, Greg. Give me a note.
I would love to. One thing I love in movies is when I can see the seams. This is another case of seeing the seams and being able to kind of like watch what's happening and be like, okay, here's where the strings are being pulled. I understand exactly how this was made. But that's like adding to the charm of the movie. Mm-hmm. It just makes me appreciate it more when I'm like, I think to do that effect, they just like obviously there's some like forced perspective kind of thing. That guy didn't get really run over by the truck sort of thing. But like, mm-hmm. the sound effect makes this impact, and like the stunt workers, like the stunt performers, like reaction, body reaction kind of like sells it. I can see how it was made, but it just makes me like the movie more. I really love that it was like, I was able to tell exactly how things were made, but it's just part of it. It made me appreciate the filmmaking even more when I could see how things were made. It's like how I like this here Game Boy that I'm showing Denny.
Yeah.
That Denny gave me. I can see all the stuff on the inside. I can see what makes this thing work, see how it ticks, but that just makes me like the thing I have. It's just, I can like enjoy what it's giving me, but also kind of look behind the scenes of what's really going on in the background. It just makes me appreciate the whole package, appreciate the whole process a little bit more. So this is an incredibly charming movie in a filmmaking sense.
That's what we on Movies for Win are going to start calling the Atomic Purple Effect. This movie absolutely has that, like a great Atomic Purple Nintendo product. Greg has multiple styles of Game Boys in Atomic Purple.
I'm just holding up Game Boys for Denny to look at. Like, this one's also like see-through.
Falling out of his pockets. Can't contain them all.
If you look at this DS, it's not see-through. You see?
There we go. Whoa.
Real shame.
I would really agree.
I got two more.
I think part of this movie's appeal is that it's really not like reality, dude. It feels like I'm going on an adventure. It feels like I'm in movie land, and it's full of movie magic, that thing that no one talks about ever.
Yeah, it's like you said at the beginning, like I kind of built off what you said, where it feels like a theme park ride of a cinematic experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes part of that is like leaning over your cart and seeing the animatronics, like what's kind of running it sort of thing. It just, you love the whole experience for what it is. And you know, maybe this movie would be, some of those scenes would be hidden by watching it on like a 20-inch screen on a VHS tape, that kind of thing. And I think I would have a fucking fantastic time experiencing it that way. But unfortunately, 4K exists or whatever, that kind of thing. But like, it doesn't take away from it at all. It is a theme park ride, popcorn eating movie in the most complimentary way I could possibly say it.
Dude, I mean, I'll die on this hill. Like, I think if you ask me what are Spielberg's two greatest achievements in technical filmmaking, I'd say probably that boulder scene, like all of it, like, you know, from the start of the movie to the pontoon boat taking off. I'd say it's that tied with the T-Rex scene in Jurassic Park. You know, I'm like, God. Those are just, like, this is what I love about those, and this is what I love loving about those, is that I truly think that is some of the greatest filmmaking ever done in the history of the world. And I do not think that is any less true because it's awesome instead of like a drama. You know, like, I don't think the fact that it's about a T-Rex or that it's about a secret temple idol with lots of booby traps, I don't think that lessens the mastery of filmmaking that Spielberg displays here. It's like so fucking cool to me.
It's the same to me as like a pivotal character moment. Like, building to that, to me, is the same as, like, exactly what you're talking about. An incredible effects sequence, or in a comedy, structuring, like, the perfect joke with, like, narratively, and then, the, like, hitting a perfect visual. Achieving something intended to elicit an effect in your audience is insanely difficult, and these are, like, thank you for bringing the T-Rex scene up again. Love thinking about that.
Yep.
I have to watch that movie again.
Anytime.
Very soon. Yeah, but just like, it elicits a reaction from you. And it's just, it takes so much talent, effort, understanding of how to achieve that. Just like, and a group effort as well. Like, it's what makes movies magical. Mm-hmm. The movie magic that goes into making something like that just hit. You can watch it 20 times and it's still going to hit just the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. You know, we joke about terms like movie magic sometimes, but man, like, I can't... Like, I
take
feel
it
like,
very seriously.
Oh, I take it dead seriously.
Dead fucking serious.
What I can't stress enough to people who didn't live through that time period is that there really was a sense of wonder around movies. There was this sense of, like, I mean, so, like, the theme parks I'm talking about going to when I was a kid, like, it was Disney MGM Studios. It was made to show you what behind-the-scenes movies were like because they wanted to undercut Universal Studios, and they played dirty. But, like, what a lot of people don't give credit for is that... part of the reason movie magic went away was because of DVD's bonus features. And these, like, theme parks that used to draw people from all over the country to show them a little glimpse of behind the scenes, now you can fucking see that on every goddamn movie you've ever wanted to know it about. And so, like, it really killed the sense of wonder around movies. But when there was a sense of wonder, I just named three prominent, like, multi-million dollar theme park examples of, like, people were willing to fly across the world and spend all kinds of money for the movie to feel a little more alive to them, because that's how magical the movie felt. That's what I grew up seeing Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark as, is, like, something that was, like, so special it, like, needed to come to life in some way. Like, that's really fucking cool, man. That's really cool.
Something that just had so much life in it that it needed a little bit more of a representation in the world. And,
well, you know, money too. That had a lot to do with it. It had a lot of money in it too. Let's not ignore that.
No, it's all artists. It's all for artistry. There's no.
Yeah, Disney makes things for the sake of art, right?
Right. Always have. Always will. Shoot, Denny might be onto something here. Well, damn. I do love that. I love loving things as much as I like liking things. And
me too.
Movie magic abounds here. I only have a couple more notes here that we can get through.
Yeah, hit me with them.
If I were to summarize... This movie had so many things, again, because I had only seen it once or twice. This movie had so many things happening in it that I was like... I thought this happened in another Indiana Jones movie. So much stuff happens.
Yeah.
And it all flows together so insanely well.
Yes.
It's like, this is just a long montage of cool stuff happening. There's not a segment or sequence that takes away from what came before or what comes next. It's just such a kinetic, like, ride through like all these different set pieces, different places all across the world, like different settings, different like emotional parts of the narrative and that kind of thing. It's just like a montage of iconic scenes and lines. And each one is more engaging than the last one, and it all just flows together insanely well. And like, if you were to kind of like sell a modern movie on this, it would feel so disjointed. You would just have cool stuff happening, but not an engaging narrative thread through the whole thing.
Sure.
Or you would have the one big sequence that like outshines all the rest, so an audience really only remembers the one big moment. This feels like such a well-connected, like, string of big moments that, like, can only be described as what we were just talking about as movie magic. Mm-hmm. What say you?
I would say the exact same thing. It's pretty perfectly paced. I do think, as a kid, I remember having pacing notes that I didn't like the romance parts. That was the only thing I didn't give a shit about as a kid. But as an adult, I'm like... I don't know, man. I do get kind of irritated at, like, oh, man. He saw her bound and gagged and was like, what a moment for me to mansplain. This is going to be great. But I don't know. I think it is such a, like, melodic pacing. You know, it's like everything that we're going through is recognizable. It's iconic. It's, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, it's that one iconic Street Bazaar scene. I was like, which one? I can think of three separate iconic Street Bazaar scenes mm-hmm. from this movie alone. It's the same as, like, the iconic temple scene. It's like, I don't know, man. There's the crypts, you know? Like, there's so many cool archaeological site scenes in this movie. And yet, I just feel like we're spending the right amount of time on everything. I just leave feeling like I had a complete meal, and it's almost like you can hum your way through it. You know, there's a certain feeling to the pacing of it that really works, I think.
Yeah. And speaking of you want to say you're humming your way through it, how about this score? John Williams score. I'm humming that all day after watching this movie.
Man, a moment in my life where I truly broke down at the stress of my job. I'm not going to say which one. I remember one time being in the bathroom at work, and I, for whatever reason, wanted to remember the Indiana Jones theme song, and I couldn't remember how it went. I was like, come on, how does this theme song go? And I couldn't remember it, and I was like, this job broke me. That's how I know. This job fucking broke me. I can't remember the Indiana Jones theme song. That's how, like, mm-hmm. recognizable this theme is to me, that I was like, do I need to go to the fucking hospital? That I can't think of dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun. Like, I was like, do I need to go to the fucking emergency room right now? What is happening? Yeah,
once you've lost that, you've truly lost everything. Mm-hmm. Totally understandable. And, yeah, man. Just again, like I said with the critic review of the week, all parties involved hitting on all cylinders. This is just like a perfect marriage of narrative. Just like, hey, John, whip up something that sells this moment, and it's like, how's this? Oh, perfect, great. And then casting, how's this? Perfect, okay, great. Hey, how about these effects? Perfect, okay, great. And it just, the whole movie is its own symphony. And the score really just underlines the whole thing. Fantastic.
Well put. John Williams was born to do this shit, dude. He was fucking mm-hmm. born for this shit. And this is him, to reiterate, firing on all cylinders. This is him. This is him at some of his absolute peak work of his career. Like, it's just... It's people like Williams and Spielberg... They peak for so long that me saying, like, this is, like, the peak of their career, that's, like, a 20-year period, you know? Like, they peak for so fucking long. I don't know that Williams is done peaking, to be honest with you.
Spielberg either. Yeah, he was peaking way before this movie, too.
Spielberg has peaked.
Yeah, I know you're not a big fan of BFG, but, you know, we don't have to talk about that.
They can't all be the Post.
I saw that one.
I didn't. Because I love myself.
One of my favorite tweets is from past and future guest of the show, Tyler Simpson, who said, "I watched The Post in a movie theater in a mall. A movie about a newspaper inside of a mall. Inside of a movie theater inside of a mall. It was a dying industry turducken." Funny shit. I butchered that, but the joke's still there.
Still, yeah. We gotta get Tyler back. We gotta watch The Last of Us ASAP. Fuck, I need to watch
By that. We, you mean you.
Yes, we. I was using the royal we.
Mm-hmm. Royally, you do have to do it. Well, just like the movie, the way I think this has to go, Denny, the movie sticks the landing, we end the adventure, then we only got a couple more minutes left, and then the yes. movie just gets out. It doesn't feel rushed. The movie ends, we tie a nice little bow on everything, and we roll credits. Perfect movie. Wow. Sure. What a great way to end things. Mm-hmm. And we're going to tie a little bow on our review here, Raiders of the Lost Ark, with some gimmicks. I assume Denny is done gushing about Raiders.
Yes.
So is it gimmick time?
Yeah. You ready? I'm ready to gush on into my gimmicks.
Love to hear it. Now, you mentioned that you were trying not to spoil your diesel spot earlier. What is your diesel spot, Denny?
Man, it's gotta be that opening sequence, for reasons previously discussed on this episode. That's just Spielberg coming in like he's fucking hot shit and just hitting all his big moves and throwing people over the top rope. You know, like, that's just Spielberg hitting fucking powerbomb after powerbomb after powerbomb, left and right, anybody who will take some. However, I do recognize it's a little bit of a boring answer, so... I will say, for a lot of reasons right now, I'm going to give a runner-up. Greg, a diesel spot is where the big top guy comes and just obliterates all the jobbers. And there was a literal diesel spot in this movie, and for a lot of reasons, it sure was nice to see the Jewish God hit the diesel spot on all those Nazis when the Ark was opened. Mm-hmm. that was an absolute a main eventer, just blowing through some jobbers face melter style. What say you? What's your diesel spot?
Absolutely love that. I think the opening scene fits the gimmick perfectly, and I will say very cathartic to very cathartic ending scene. I'll just leave it at that. I went more of a much smaller example, and I think it's the scene where the Ark is on the truck, mm-hmm. and we're kind of, you know, we're chasing the truck down by horse, we get on there, we fight the Nazis off the truck, and very specifically, it's the scene where Indy's thrown out the front windshield, mm-hmm. and he goes under the moving truck to come into the back cargo area to get back on. It's not just the stunt, but it's the music in that moment. It's like this perfectly like earned climax within an action climax. Like, we're crescendoing within our crescendo. It's like this cool thing. And like I said, I can kind of see the seams. Like, this stunt double never turns their face towards the camera. I feel like the whole time we're under the truck, we're just on some sort of a sled.
Yes.
Guiding ourselves under the truck. I don't care. It's so cool. It's so earned. It fucking works perfectly. It's like I said, this, like I kind of opened the discussion with Spielberg's kind of big budget feel, but still a handcrafted sort of organic visual to it. Mm-hmm. There's something so authentic about that scene. Like, the way it was made would be how a bunch of people at the time with like no budget would want to do it, but he has the balls and the budget to do it and makes it happen. No shortcuts. It just fucking clicks. I absolutely love that scene. That's like it feels like one of the best examples of the Spielberg trademark in the movie. So that's what I'm going to go with.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's actually a note I made that I didn't end up talking about. So it stood out to both of us, dude. I was making a note about the photography alone for that stunt sequence. I was mm-hmm. just like, God, that's smooth. And he gets like such, like, I know they're not really dragging a stunt double behind this truck, but it really looks like it's just on the ground, you know, like they've really mm-hmm. convinced me. It was fucking sick, dude. I fucking loved it too.
It was, yeah, completely fantastic. That whole segment during that car chase was, like I said, completely earned. Yep. And just a very kinetic thing. There's just like a new way to shoot each individual way we knock a guy off the truck. Mm-hmm. Basically, like, it's fascinating stuff. I absolutely love it. What is your favorite line for Raiders?
Man, you know, it's kind of surprises me that, I mean, like, your iconic line for this movie is, why'd it have to be snakes, right? Like, that's like the mm-hmm. the big, like, ah, he said the thing line. I didn't feel like there were a ton of big one-liners for the type of movie that I feel like would have a bunch. I didn't feel like there was a ton.
Yeah.
I might even say that's part of my issue with The Last Crusade, is that there are so many. Anyway, mm-hmm. I went with a few. I'll give a runner-up for Indy, just given some badass action hero dialogue, and I'll give my pick. Runner-up was just him saying, it's not the years, honey, it's the mileage. And I was like, boy, do I fucking feel that at fucking 35. I did not expect to feel this old at this age. Man, absolute badass action hero dialogue is, you want to talk to God? Let's go see him together. I've got nothing better to do. I was just like, it's fucking ice cold, man. I love that shit. That's my favorite line.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love
Devil
it.
May care.
I put one down fully intending to, like, put two or three more down and, like, finding another one later, like, kind of landing on one, but I just... Yeah. I guess I forgot. I got immersed. I got wrapped up in the story. Mm-hmm. I only put down one, and looking back, I like it. I want to keep it.
Cool.
Right before we get into the truck chase scene that I was just talking about, Indy's coming up with a plan, like, all right, I'm going to go chase that truck and get the Ark. Gimli asks, how are you going to do that? And Indy just says, I don't know. I'm making this up as I go.
Yeah!
Which is just how the story fucking feels. Just a cool, badass dude making it up as he goes, and it just fucking works for him. Oh, so great.
You know,
I love it.
It takes a lot to make someone be, like, that lucky and that charming and that affable, and to make us be like, yeah, he is cool as fuck, though, to be honest. You know, like, that's, mm-hmm. like, it's just, like, again, it's in the magic of the character and the direction and the actor, and, like, it's just, you could write that character and have it fail for so many other performers and directors, you know? It would just be, like, this nothing... Johnny Do Good, you know, like, always mm-hmm. always wins, white meat baby face type of John Cena ass character. But, and I guess it probably comes from Harrison Ford's performance in so many ways. He just has this edge to him that makes you just be like, you charming little motherfucker and your fucking cheeky ass improv, whatever, man, go get him, Indy.
Yeah, it never feels exhausting. The line itself does kind of feel... It's a reminder that he is improvising so much of the yeah. stuff that's just happened. Just like, oh yeah, I guess he is kind of... Nah, I love him. Who cares?
Totally right, works.
Yeah. Works for him. Works for me as an audience member. How would you score Raiders of the Lost Ark, Danny? What would you give it as a critic score?
That's a 50 out of 50, Daddy-O. For those keeping track, I have rated every movie on this theme 50 out of 50. So that's top shelf material we're pulling out from my rankings. What about you, Greg?
I got good news about the rest of the movies for you, too, I think. I gave this one a 35 out of 40. Not my favorite movie ever. It's fantastic, though. I had a great time with it. That's definitely one of my higher scores. Puts it into the top bunch. It is a fantastic, kinetic, fun, high-energy action-adventure movie that I don't think anyone could ever replicate. This movie is just a series of highlights of what Spielberg does right and is good at. So, a stand-up film from one of the best to ever do it. We have covered better films of his on this podcast already, but like I said, this is the seventh one of his. So, we're like not even, we can't even see the bottom of the barrel yet, if you know what I'm saying.
We're not even to his like average ones yet. We've only done his really, really good ones.
We haven't even gotten to the mid section. We've got plenty we could talk about with Spielberg. Makes him a perfect entrant into the Royal Rumble. Like I said, now there's three guys in there. It's just the master of... Oh, damn. What was I going to say? We've got the master. We've got Kubrick. I had something for Spielberg, but I forgot it. The most prolific of the three, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I would even say, like, the most accessible, probably. Like... Yeah, and I think that's a feather in his cap, not a strike against him. I think it's cool that he's basically the best at making crowd pleasers ever. You know, like he's just keeps rolling out the hits with making movies that people like, and that's awesome.
Yeah, that's if anybody could do it, somebody else would have been doing it already.
Yeah,
no one can exactly. Do it. Yeah. Nobody can do it like him. It's not even a formula. It's just a winning attribute that no one else has been able to click with. No one else has been able to replicate in any real way. Mm-hmm. So I will never describe his accessibility of his movies as like a knock against him.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. So
we're not that kind of podcast. Love
Mm-mm. Who has time for that? Can be cynical about a lot of things, but this ain't one of them. All right, Denny, we've done it. We've briefly touched on, we scratched the surface even a little bit of one of the best directors ever.
Yep.
We do have more directors, though.
We do.
There's some music being played. I think there's an insane needle drop coming for our next director. Do you know what we have next? Do I need to tell you?
I remember two options. I think I know what we're doing next. Are we going to the Quick Trip?
I believe we are.
All right.
The QT.
Yes. The okay. QT, yeah, as it's yeah, called. That's what I meant. Yeah.
We're not done squashing Nazis just yet. We have got to go back to Nazi occupied France with our good pal Quentin Tarantino to cover Inglourious Basterds. Next week, a heavy hitter from a heavy hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I cannot fucking wait to talk about Inglourious Basterds.
Also, interestingly enough, we've decided that in accordance with Royal Rumbles on N64, AKI Engine Wrestling Games, there can only be four in the ring at once, so there must be an elimination after next week. That's going to be an audience vote. You're going to have a hard choice of who to kick out of the ring first before the next entrant can come in. We have been really looking for a reason to do Inglourious Basterds for a minute. Greg and I are both really big fans, and we'll leave it until next week, because in America we just say catchphrases.
Damn it, you took my bit, so I'm going to... damn it, Denny. That might just be your masterpiece. Please just give me the catchphrase. I can't top that, I'm not going to lie.
All right. For Greg, the not-so-secret Stash Johnson, I'm Denny. Let's hope the meds work, Taylor. And this has been Movies for When? We already told you when. But you know what we didn't tell you? What's my cage again?
I'm a policeman. See my badge?
Stay.